You're listening to the Sports Community Podcast, the show dedicated to improving the lives of sports volunteers all around the world. This is the first episode of Season 2020. So without any delay, here's your host, Steve Pallas.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Sports Community Podcast. Or for many of you, welcome back to the Sports Community Podcast. It's been two very long years since we did our last podcast, which has been really a really great break for us and gave us the opportunity to work really closely with clubs and peak bodies. But we're really excited to be back doing weekly podcasts from now on, building on the 93 episodes that we've done previously before. Our goal with the Sports Community Podcast is to bring you stories, information that simply make it easier to be a sports club volunteer. So these stories, most of the stories that we'll bring you will actually be clubs and volunteers doing great things, doing amazing things, bringing new ideas, new innovations to clubland, and we'll look at it and we'll explore it and see what we can learn from each of those clubs. We'll also look at areas such as participation. We really want to focus on participation, how to increase participants, but more so understanding the changing dynamics of sports participation, because what we've seen is there's probably been more change in the last 5 years in the way that people participate in their sport than there has in the previous 50. So some clubs and some sports are embracing this really, really well, while others are still really, really staying with the traditional way to their cost and to their detriment. So we'll really explore participation trends, participation options, and see how sports are doing great things in this space. We'll also look at what some people might call the boring compliance and legislation space. And next week we'll be joined by Paul Horvath, the sports lawyer, who will be a regular guest on the podcast, and he'll take us through some of the things that the committees need to understand about their legal perspective. And yes, we'll start with the roles and the responsibilities, but then we'll go on and explore different areas like end-of-season trips and travelling teams and the legal responsibilities about those sorts of groups, and lots of other different areas that we may not automatically consider when we're thinking legal and compliance. One of the areas that you keep telling us that you want more and more information on is fundraising. So fundraising, different ideas, different ways to raise funds is always on our radar. So we'll be bringing you lots of different fundraising ideas throughout the year. And one of the other areas that I'm really excited about is what we're calling the CEO series. So we'll invite CEOs from different peak sporting bodies, government agencies related to sport and rec, to come on, share their experiences, share their knowledge, and most importantly, share what they know that can help volunteers make it easier to run your sports club. So this our podcast is your podcast, so we want you to be telling us when you know of great clubs, great ideas, great information that you want to hear about, learn about, tell people about, then tell us about it and we'll put it onto the podcast. So there's two ways that you can tell us. You can either go to the Sports Community website, www.sportscommunity.com.au, and click on the Contact Us page and just fill in the page with as much information as you can give us about your idea and your thoughts or your story idea and send it through to us. Alternatively, go to the Sports Community Facebook page and send us a direct message. Either way, we'll get straight back to you and we'll get more information and hopefully we'll get your stories and your ideas into the podcast. The podcast, coming back after 2 years, has only really been possible because of the great support of the sports community members. So we'd love it if people would consider becoming a sports community member and help us bring not just the podcast, but other great resources to clubs and volunteers around the country. So if you want to learn more about sports community membership, again, go to the sports community website, www.sportscommunity.com.au. Now, as we get into this episode, the first episode back in a couple of years, we really wanted to find a great story to launch the podcast back into the podcast sphere. And we were looking at different ideas, different stories, and we kept coming back to the one story about the Hepburn Football Netball Club. It's a country football netball club in country Victoria in Australia. And what they did, which when I first heard about it over 12 months ago, I thought there's no way known they would be able to pull this off. But what they did is they held effectively a mega raffle, and the first prize was a $400,000 Kenworth truck. But what the raffle was 1,000 tickets at $1,000. Now, 1,000 tickets valued at $1,000, when you do the sums, that's $1 million. So they did $1 million raffle. And so when I heard about this more than 12 months ago, I genuinely didn't think it was possible. And so we've been watching the Hepburn Football Netball Club over the last 12 months. And not only was it possible, not only did they sell 1,000 tickets worth $1,000, but they sold it early and drew the raffle nearly 2 months earlier than they expected to do, which was an unbelievable sort of outcome for a community football club in a very small rural country Victoria town. So without any further ado, I think it's really great that we introduce the president of the Hepburn Football Netball Club, Jason Dooley, to tell us exactly how on earth they were managed to do $1 million truck raffle. Jason Dooley, president of the Hepburn Football Netball Club, welcome to the Sports Community Podcast.
Very happy to be here, Steve.
Jason, I'm so excited that you are here, because when I first heard about what your club had done, and it was probably 12 months ago, maybe a little bit more, when I was talking to one of the competitors in your football netball league, the president of the Springbank Football Netball Club, and he was telling me about this club that was going to run a raffle for a truck, 1,000 tickets at $1,000, that's $1 million draw. And I kind of thought, I actually don't think that's possible. And so for the last 12 months, I've been following what your club's done and been telling people quite regularly, and the response has been the same. We don't think that's possible. But the reality is, not only is it possible, you've actually done this raffle, haven't you?
Yeah, it's done and dusted. It was drawn early last year. So, almost 12 months ago.
Yeah, it's been amazing. And and I guess so, we just want to explore that from, every which angle. So take us through a little bit of the history of where the idea for the truck raffle came from, because it's not necessarily the club's first major raffle, is it?
No, it's actually the fourth truck that the club has raffled. Back in the 90s, the club came up with an idea to raffle a Kenworth T900. And did so successfully, in fact, that they sold it out virtually in no time, and had another 1,200 people or something like that wanting to buy a ticket. So the structure was a little bit different back then. I think there might have been 2,000 tickets, 250 a ticket or something like that. I'm really not as say it was how it all worked, but they did another one virtually straight away, and so that was two, and then a couple of years later they raffled another one of the same trucks, the Kenworth T900, it went all right as well. So the club's got a history, a successful history of running these sort of raffles that have got a higher price, I suppose, for a ticket, but very good odds in the way that there was only 1,000 tickets. You had 1,000 to 1 chance of winning. know, the one we're currently raffling is a Harley and a boat, which there's 1,500 tickets in that one. So, you know, without giving away too many of our secrets, we don't want every sports club in Australia trying to jump on what we do. But, you know, we've built up a database and all that sort of thing now. So we've pretty much got our captive audience, and we just let them know what we're up to and they buy the tickets. So
yeah, so that's a really interesting point. And I was actually going to explore that a little bit later on, that you've actually got, over time, you've built that database, built it up, and you've now got quite an audience outside of the immediate club supporters to draw on, which is really important, because for those listeners around Australia and in fact around the world, Hepburn's a country town outside of Melbourne in Victoria, so very small community. So you don't necessarily want to be drawing on that same community for all your fundraising. So this is a great way of getting outside your community, Jason.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you just can't keep hitting the same people up for dollars year after year after year and you know, season after season. So yeah, that's a good way to bring some money in from outside.
So the truck itself, if we're kind of looking at the raffle design, and I'll ask also in the same question, what are the other prizes that you had with the truck? But how important was the fact that it was a truck to the a significant truck, the Kenworth, and it was a special edition truck as well. So how significant was the prize? How relevant was the prize in the your ability to sell tickets at the value of $1,000?
It was the only truck that it would have been possible to do this raffle. So Kenworth released a limited edition Legend 900. So it's the same truck that we raffled back in the 90s. But it's a reproduction, obviously, of that. So they hadn't made them since, I think, maybe 97, something like that. and the trucks themselves, you know, probably one of the most legendary in the transport industry. So, you know, lots and lots of them still on the road. And there's not many get retired. They either get rebirthed once they're sort of worn out, or they just keep going.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
That legendary. So, hence the name, the Legend 900. Kenworth released a Legend 950, which is a very similar truck, about 5 years ago. And I sort of always knew that with the success of that they would do a Legend 900, which was a great tie-in for us, considering the same truck that we raffled years ago. So we were pretty much had our money saved up, and we were waiting for the truck to be released. And there was a specific ordering day, so you had to order on. There was only one day that they were taking orders.
Wow.
Order that day, and you had to pay a deposit that day to secure one to be built. So, so the truck was ordered, and then we had to obviously wait for it to be built as well. So, logistics around that, I think it was about, it was close to 12 months for us to take our turn for our vehicle to be built. And, you know, the raffle sort of kicked off probably just before it, you know, went into production, I think.
Yeah, cool.
So, yeah.
So just going back to the nuts and bolts of running a raffle of this magnitude, obviously you had to get a license to do a raffle of this size?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. So anything over $5,000, you know, you've got to get a license for. So you just go through the process with the Victorian Gambling and Licensing Commission. You just go through that with them.
Was there reporting requirements at the back end? Did you have to report on the money?
Absolutely. No, you've got to report monthly.
Okay.
And everything's got to balance monthly as well. So, it's virtually a full-time job for someone to run a raffle like this and keep everything, you know, above board and transparent, because the transparency of the raffle and the integrity of it is absolutely paramount for people to consider shelling out $1,000 for a ticket.
Oh, unquestionably. And that concept of it's almost a full-time job leads me beautifully to my next question, was how did you allocate the work? Did you create a special subcommittee, or how was the work allocated and overseen and marketed, etc.?
Yeah, no, we just had a volunteer who was retired, actually my auntie by chance. She, yep. She got a background in, sort of professional clerical work and that sort of thing.
Yep.
So, and also in design and stuff. So she did a lot of it to actually design, our flyers and our raffle tickets and all that sort of stuff, as well as sending out the orders as they came in, balancing the books, reporting to the Gambling Commission and all that sort of thing. So.
Yeah, yeah. So $1,000 a ticket, did you, in the nuts and bolts of it, did you only give the tickets out when the money came in, or were people creating syndicates, yeah, or were they paying off the tickets, or how did the logistics of, I guess...
No, there's no paying off tickets. Yep. Like, if you want to buy a ticket, well, you round up the money or you save the money and buy a ticket. And,
yep.
It's funny, the guy who actually won the truck is an invalid pensioner who... I asked that very question of his brother. The guy who won it had a stroke a few years back. He's an old truck driver, and so he wasn't really comfortable speaking. So he put his brother on, and I said, "Oh, we got the story. He's a pensioner, and gee, he must be good with his money to be able to save up and buy a ticket like that." And his brother said he's unbelievable with money. He's very, he does what needs to be done. He looks after himself. He does all those sort of things. But he's a great saver as well.
Yeah.
And he saved and saved and saved and saved until he had the money and bought himself a ticket and pretty much set himself up for the rest of his life.
Well, yeah, unquestionably. How long, you talk about save and save and save. So that then implies that the raffle was open for, or at least announced, and open, or tickets were for sale for a significant amount of time. How long did you have the tickets 12 open?
Months.
12 months?
I'm pretty sure it was 12 months. Yeah.
Fantastic.
So so we gave it 12 months, but, always said that we would draw the raffle early should we sell it out.
Yep.
And that's what happened. It was drawn, I think, a month or maybe 6 weeks early, than the original draw date. So once again, you've got to go to the Gambling Commission and get that permission.
Yep.
To do that. But that's what we did. We sold it out early and drew it early.
And doing it early has a number of benefits, because it effectively sets up the next raffles, kind of saying to people, hey, you can't leave this to the last moment because they might sell out. And that's that's what happened in this case. So that's huge.
Yeah, and it was good to sell it out early. It was absolutely amazing.
Yeah. I'm still struggling to believe it's even possible, which is why you're the first podcast back for the Sports Community Podcast season this year. So I'll just go back to that. Did you have many ticket buyers that were syndicates? Like a lot of football clubs and sports clubs are full of younger people that wouldn't necessarily be able to afford $1,000 tickets. Did they come together and group together in syndicates?
Yeah, there was. Absolutely. I couldn't tell you the data on that, how many, but I'd say, there's probably less than 100 that were syndicates.
Wow. Geez, I would have thought it was the other way. So, geez. Now, Kenworth, there's a lot of, if you Google Hepburn Hepburn truck raffle, there's a lot of different articles on the internet about this actual raffle. And it appears that Kenworth were really got on board and supported the club and the raffle and what you were trying to do and gave you a lot of access to the truck. Is that how it actually played out?
Yeah, absolutely. Kenworth were great. We promised them that, you know, we would pay for the truck as soon as we possibly could. And which we did, but prior to us having paid for it, they took it to a couple of truck shows for us and stuff like that, and had it on display at Kenworth in Melbourne as well. So, we had access to go down and sell tickets at their yearly pallet sale and that sort of thing. So, yeah, no, the Kenworth were very supportive. We couldn't fold them at all.
So I mean, that's a good lesson for clubs, isn't it? Is that particularly where the prizes are significant, that that even if you do pay full price for the prize, I mean, often clubs are trying to get the prizes donated, but you kind of go the other way and go, well, pay full price for the prize, but then how can you help us promote it? And it seems to be that you were able to access a really passionate group of people that are really interested in the prize and seem to really become a part of the fundraising project.
Yeah, well, you know, we've got a few guys on the committee that were, including yourself, that are in the transport industry. So, just I guess having a finger on the pulse is what got us organised, I suppose, to have a go at doing this raffle. So, but yeah, as far as Kenworth's concerned, you know, they were fantastic. But yeah, there's no special discounts or
no
anything like that. But they treated us like they would treat any customer paying, you know, $400,000 for a vehicle.
Yeah,
so, which generally is pretty bloody
well.
Good.
Yeah. You were selling tickets at the truck show. Like, so roughly, how many tickets do you think were sold within the normal club community, and how many do you think were sold outside of the community?
Maybe 100 tickets sold locally.
Wow.
10%. Yeah, but the rest of the tickets were sold all around Australia. I even had a guy from New Zealand buy a few tickets. All over the place, really.
And that's so important, because the true definition of fundraising is to reduce the cost, or the reason we fundraise is to reduce the cost of participation to the participants and the members. And so every time we go back to them, it's not actually reducing the cost. It's just charging them in a different way. So to get such a significant portion of the money from outside of the community is just a phenomenal fundraising event. So how did you sell the tickets? I notice that you've got obviously the website, which is www.hepburnfnclubraffle.com, which if any of the listeners were to type that into the internet, Hepburn, Hepburnfn clubraffle.com, you'll see your latest raffle there, which is a Harley Davidson motorbike and a fishing boat and some other great prizes. But where did most of the sales come from? Or was it the truck shows? Was it the internet? Like,
so that's a bit of everything. You've got to work hard at selling tickets.
Yeah.
You just can't expect to put on a raffle and it's just gonna come to you. You know, you've got to be out on the road selling tickets. You've got to be, you know, every weekend you've got to find somewhere to go to sell tickets, and you've got to find volunteers to do so. So some come from probably a lot in this raffle was word of mouth.
Yeah.
Just with, you know, with the prize, so forth. And there's advertising. We advertised in all the big truck magazines and all that sort of thing. and there's there's getting off your bum and getting on the road and selling some tickets.
So when you say on the road, which is really timely, I guess, for a truck raffle, but where were some of the things that you were going? I mean, you've already mentioned all the places you were going. You mentioned the truck shows, the Deniliquin truck show, the Kenworth sales and Kenworth showrooms. But where were you going, on a weekly basis, it sounds like? What were the different places you were going to sell the tickets or raise the profile or start the conversation?
Once again, away all of our secrets. Oh.
Patty from Springbank won't be listening. You know that, don't you?
Yeah, I'm not worried about Patty, mate. He's all right.
Yeah, that's good.
But yeah, at the same time, you don't want every man and his dog trying to raffle a Kenworth because they fail. So
yeah.
But it's just you find something on somewhere. There's something on somewhere where people are going to be, and you just, you call, book a site, and go and sit there and try and sell tickets.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
Oh, and I think what you just said was so accurate that if most clubs went and tried to sell a Kenworth, they would fail, and they would fail dismally. But just listening to you, there's a reason that you were selling a Kenworth. Like your club had a history of it. It had special significance, but you also had people in the game that could take you inside the industry. And so if you were recommending not so much a truck raffle, but a large scale raffle to other clubs, that would be one of the tips, it sounds like, is that find something that's relevant to your committee, to your club, and to your audience, and link it in that way. Don't just copy what other clubs have done. Would that be a good summary of what you've learned so far?
Yeah, perhaps. Finding something that's going to work in your community, but also something that's got to be appealing to outside your community as well. So, I'm just not sure that, this type of thing or you change to a different brand of truck it's just not going to work. This was a one in a million chance, this raffle, of coming off just because they built that legend truck.
Yeah.
Same truck as we'd already raffled back in the 90s. And, it was just all the planets had to align for it to work. And they did, and the raffle did work. So
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess to reinforce that point, your Harley Davidson raffle that you're running is currently open and people can buy tickets for via the website. That's significantly less money and significantly less tickets, isn't it? I just off the top of my head.
Oh, absolutely. Yep. So, look, we generally run a raffle like that, once a year. We've done all sorts of things over the years, spending sprees and, world travel and, cars, boats, all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Caravans, but it's at the moment we're just doing the Harley and a Quintrex fishing boat, so
yeah,
a couple of great prizes. There's about 75 something like that $1,000 worth of prizes in the raffle, and if we sell it out, it's $100 a ticket, 1500 tickets at $100 a ticket. So if you sell it out after your costs, all that stuff, you've got to pay GST on every ticket. There's so many things that you don't realise until you're involved. But we hope to make, if we sold it out, we might make $50,000 or $60,000 out of that, which will be our bread and butter for the year. Which means we don't have to keep hitting up our members, year after year. Function after function to raise the money.
Oh, and that's so important for clubs in this in this day and age. But I'm really interested. You said you'd find somewhere to go each weekend, and you'll book a spot, and you'll sell the tickets or create the conversation, yep, which eventually sells the tickets. Yep. Did you get the players involved in that process at all? Like, a lot of clubs are frustrated off by the playing group not participating in the fundraising activities a lot. Did you get much support from the playing group?
Mainly committee, really. Players. We really don't get too much involvement with the raffle from the players.
Yeah.
But mainly committee and volunteers do that sort of legwork. And, there's always the occasional player who will help out or whatever, but you probably find that your committee and your older volunteers and that sort of thing, they're the people who perhaps their kids have grown up. They've got a little bit more time on their hands. They're not working full time and are probably a little bit more, I suppose, community-minded than young people can be these days.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, they're the people for us that do that legwork, and the players do the legwork out on the ground.
Yeah, yep, absolutely. And so roughly that pool of people that you had that you could draw on for those different activities and that sort of thing, how many was that? Was that, excluding the committee, was it a small group of 5, 10 or...?
Yeah, it was probably it was probably sort of 8 people, I suppose, that did most of that work. Just sort of getting in the car and going out on the weekend, even if it's just to the local Sunday market or whatever. You know, as long as if you get somewhere, you're going to sell tickets. If you don't go, they're not going to sell themselves. You know what I mean? So you've got to get out and about. To make it successful, because if you don't, it just won't be. It doesn't matter what raffle you're running.
Well, I mean, that's certainly coming through loud and clear that it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. And it's, I still am blown away that it was not only was it possible, but it you sold out months in advance and drew the raffle early. Did it get much media? I mean, I did read probably 5 or 6 different things on the internet, but did it get much media along the journey?
Look, it probably didn't get a lot of, TV coverage and all that sort of thing. But certainly, print media and online media, there were certainly, articles that were written and... Yeah, both in the online and in the print. So probably not a lot other than that. Not a lot of radio or TV. So. Yeah,
well, and in the show notes to this episode, we'll put a lot of the 5 or 6 different links, including the link to the club website, so people can go and have a look at the raffle and buy a ticket. Because who doesn't want a Harley and who doesn't want a fishing boat?
Absolutely.
Jason, you've been unbelievably generous with your time and really, really appreciate it. So just before you go, like, again, we're not talking about a truck raffle, but if we're talking about a kind of a mega raffle type scenario, what would be some of the tips that you would kind of give to people that are contemplating this and make sure they've got in place before they go ahead? Because one of the things we don't want to do is invest a lot of time and then for something to fail. So what would be some of the advice or the tips that you would have for people considering it?
Look, firstly, I'd probably say, make sure that you've done your research and that you've got all of your legal stuff, sorted out and in place. It's paramount that all that stuff's done. Secondly, probably transparency. Be sure that people feel comfortable with what you're doing, why you're doing it, and that it is, illegal, and not illegal, a legal raffle.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, it's about getting those permits, making sure those permit numbers are are displayed on your tickets and on your advertising information and that sort of thing. And probably the most important thing is don't think that you're going to run a raffle and it's a $100,000 raffle, and it's just gonna print the tickets and they're gonna sell themselves, because it just doesn't happen. You've got to get off your bum and you've got to get out and sell the tickets. If you don't do that, you'll fail. And it's paramount that people are prepared to do the work to raise the money, because if they're not, it just doesn't work. That's probably, three of the key things, I reckon.
Well, I don't think there's anything more I can add to that. I think that's just unbelievably sage advice from a very experienced sports administrator and fundraiser. So I think, Jason, on that note, I'll say thank you very much for giving us your time, sharing your insights. You didn't give away too much, so that was one of the conditions of the interview.
I might get hauled over the coals at the next committee meeting.
we'll look to return the favour with other interviews that we do through the year that the Hepburn Football Netball Club can get some ideas and some tips.
No worries, mate. We'll be only too happy to talk to you at any stage, mate. Thanks, Steve.
Jason Dooley, Hepburn Football Netball Club, thank you so much for joining us at the Sports Community Podcast. So it was great to hear from Jason that it actually is possible to do something that just about everybody I had spoken to, no, actually, not just about everybody, everybody I had spoken to about their mega truck raffle actually didn't think it was possible. Jason took us on a journey of not only of, yes, that it was possible, but he told us how. And there were some really important takeaways from his interview that I think we should really focus on. And it's not just about the truck raffle, but it's more about these mega type raffles. And the first one was, don't underestimate the amount of administrative work, the permit, the compliance, the continual reporting to the government agencies. So make sure that you've got your team in place or the right person in place to do that. Because as Jason said, one of the key things that helped sell the raffle tickets was the integrity and the transparency of the process. So really important things like putting permit numbers on the raffle tickets and being really transparent with what the money's for, how you're going with collecting the money. And those administrative things give the raffle integrity, which is vital when we're asking for significant amounts of money. The other thing that really struck me, and Jason kept coming back to it, was you've got to be prepared to do the work. It was a lot of work. You didn't sell tickets if you didn't do something, but you did sell tickets if you went out into the community, told your story, told the conversation. So I think that's really important. He really went over and over that you just can't build it and they will come, that you've got to do the work. The other thing that I think I took out of that was the prize was really important. And in this case, they chose a truck because of the history, because the people in the industry, because of its relevance to their country, rural Victoria. But so when choosing prizes for your mega raffles, look at what is relevant to your club, to your community, to your stakeholders, and where can they take you? What works well in one community definitely doesn't necessarily mean to be working well in the next community. So really think about that. But what we did know that if you choose the right prize and have the right work ethic, then you can get a significant amount of support from the people that are actually providing the prizes. And as with the Football Netball Club, with Hepburn, don't be scared to pay full price for your prizes. If it's a great prize, the benefits will come. So I'm really excited about that because I know I've said it quite a few times through this podcast. I genuinely did not think it was possible for a club to sell 1,000 tickets at $1,000 and make, you know, or generate $1 million, of which a lot of that obviously goes in prizes. So really, if you want to listen to the podcast again or you want to see different pieces of information, go to the Sports Community website for the show notes. So two ways of doing that, go to sportscommunity.com.au and click on the podcast tab right at the top of the page. Or alternatively, if you want to go directly to this episode's show notes, sportscommunity.com.au/podcast/ 2020-01. So that's the year 2020-01 being the first podcast for the year. So again, thank you to the sports community members for making it possible for us to again bring the sports community podcast to our sporting community. We'd love it if you enjoyed the podcast to check out the membership at sportscommunity.com.au. And we look forward to joining you again next week when we bring the second episode for 2020 for the Sports Community Podcast. So I'm Steve Pallas, and until next week, thank you for being part of our sports community.